Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Has nabbed it from Milivojevic, and there's a chance for Son here to be played in. He's in space on the edge of the area on the right side. He works it onto his left foot, drives it forward and scores! Jungmin Son scores the first goal for Tottenham Hotspur at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
I'm Tom Rennie and this is the Premier League Preview Show. Our panel today, TalkSport's football editor David Walker, also an FA Cup winner in Paul Parker, and David Connolly is here as well, who played for all the clubs under the sun and the Republic of Ireland as well. Great to have you with us on the show. Right, let's get to it. Let's start with the FA Cup semi-finals, shall we? You liked that one, didn't you? Let's start with Brighton against Manchester City. Saturday, 5:30 UK time. This one gets underway. Let's start with Brighton here. We'll get to Man City, obviously. David Connolly, let's come to you first on this. Now, Brighton beat Millwall on penalties. We talked about that the day after. They must have felt, when they got that game won, the way it all unfolded, the way they won it, their name was on the cup this year. Then moments later, the balls come out of the bag or receptacle or whatever they are these days.
They are very modern.
Is it a bag still?
Yeah.
It's a bag into a receptacle.
A velvet bag, yeah.
Out of the velvet bag. It's still traditional. I knew that. And they pull the balls out. The numbers come out. And it's Manchester City. You've got to tell me, David Connolly, how Brighton go about beating Manchester City in the FA Cup this weekend.
I can't tell you because, you know, it's going to be virtually impossible for them. Let's be honest. They're in really poor form, Brighton. They got out of jail to actually get to this stage. I mean, they're terrible against Millwall. They really were. He had to make a couple of changes and the subs came on at the Den and done really well. The likes of Solly March were superb. But without maybe that impact, they wouldn't even be this far. It'd be Millwall contesting this game. Look, City, even the other night, their bench, I don't know if you saw it. I mean, it had Sterling, Walker, Kompany, Gundogan, the two silvers. I mean, he could probably feel two sides. You know, the team he puts out in this game. Look, Swansea gave him a scare. We know that. However, I just don't think Brighton are going to run them anywhere close. The only thing you could say is maybe they might take it a little bit lightly. The fans possibly are, because I think they've sent back about 20,000 tickets. So maybe they just think, well, you know what? Either we've kind of had enough of football or we're getting a bit fatigued going.
Imagine getting fatigued of success. That's a weird feeling, isn't it? You must be fatigued of it, Paul. Success, too much of it down the years.
I'll tell you what, go and get yourself relegated. Find out how fatigued you really get. I've got that one behind me. You don't ever forget that. And you never forget winning things. And you definitely don't forget being involved in teams that are attempting to win trophies, to play in cup finals. And City, really, it's bad, really. When you look at the gates they're getting for games, even like last night, it was a big game going towards a league title. Mm. And they're still not selling out their grounds. They're not filling grounds. Mm. And is that a little bit of arrogance to send back so many tickets?
They haven't sent that many back, have they?
No, it's about 5,000 to 8,000, I think, that have gone back. So look, it's not, but it's still quite a lot. You've got to be quite annoyed, Dave. I mean, you know, you'd kill a relative to get there for the weekend, right? To watch Watford Wolves.
Walk
over broken glass barefoot.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm actually not going to be there.
You can't make it.
I can't
what,
make
this
it.
Time? Stag do? Friends party?
You're gonna,
nice
I've
dinner?
I've got a feeling in particular Paul's going to kill me for this.
Go on.
Right. I'm going to be in New York at the weekend. I'm going to be at WrestleMania.
Oh, Dave!
You know what? Since he offered me the opportunity to throughout there that I'm going to have a go. I'm not even going to say anything. I'm using the words, silence is golden.
That's an absolute body slam for all of us. I think we can all agree.
Very good. But look, no, Watford haven't, I don't think, quite sold out all their tickets yet. We'll get onto that game later.
Sure.
But I think people have a bash at City for this. And I don't, you know, look, it's the fan base is what the fan base is. I don't think it's fatigue. They've got, you know, they haven't got as big a fan base as Manchester United or as some other big clubs.
So
but
should it be
somewhere
else? Should it have been like the olden days? Maybe, I don't know, Paul, where you played, semis would have been out. I think I got to the quarters, but the Villa Park would have been a great place for it.
Absolutely perfect. It would have been middle ground for both. So Wembley is absolutely absorbing, and people are fed up of going to Wembley and seeing semi-finals at Wembley. They don't really get it at Wembley.
Yeah, the magic has been taken away somewhat of Wembley, but it's not going to change.
Yeah,
that's the way it is.
For reasons we all understand.
Look,
if
the Chequered Trade had 85,000 and we got an FA Cup semi, which hasn't got, you know, as many fans, it'll be disappointing.
Yeah, the atmosphere will still be good on the day.
It will.
It will be good. And those City fans, those Brighton fans, Watford Wolves fans, they'll all be there on the day and they'll all be desperate for their team to win. And bringing it back to the original question, Tom, how are Brighton going to win this game?
Do you see any way?
You just can't, can you? I mean, you'll try and defend, and they'll just pick you off like City did to Cardiff last night.
I mean, they don't have
many
injuries right now,
do they? Go at them, and
Pascal Gross is fit. He's not been fit for so much of this season. Izquierdo should be fit for this game. He's missed quite long swathes of it. And Doné and Jahan Bakshu have started playing well recently. They've got attacking options defensively. We've spoken a lot over the last few years about how good Dunk and Duffy are together. Matt Ryan's a good goalkeeper. You know, they're not the worst team.
No, look, they're a solid back four. They've got two decent midfield players in that, you know, Dale Stevens and certainly will get around, and David Proper. He likes to play this 4-2-3-1. He's not going to deviate from that. I don't think there'll be many goals in this game. Certainly, you know, not for Brighton. And it's just whether they can keep it as tight as possible. I think their best performance recently was probably against Palace. They did really well there. You know, they're heavily reliant on Glenn Murray. Mm. You know, they're probably going to need something special from Knockhart. But, you know, he hasn't really delivered week in, week out. But he might rise to the occasion. I guess that's what you're hoping for, that one or two do that.
Well, it's the game. It's the game. Them playing at Wembley would be big. If an average team would become a good team playing at Wembley because of the fact that there is just something different. But then you've got to hope.
Hey, look, they only had one shot on target against Chelsea, Brighton. So they're not going to have the ball. They're probably going to have it, 20% of the time. From that, they might get one shot, and they've got to take it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard.
Let's talk about Manchester City then. They beat Cardiff in midweek, scored two early goals, then kind of shut up shop in that one. They've got the Tottenham game coming up next week in the Champions League, the first leg of their quarterfinal in that competition. They rested players in the league against Cardiff. Are they going to rest players, Paul, in the FA Cup semi-final, thinking about the Champions League in midweek?
But they can afford to rest players because they've got quality. Up 18 players, 19 players you can name, which are quality. So they can go and do that, and it isn't, I should say, going to affect them for the Champions League.
But what does it mean about the FA Cup if we see Phil Foden start, made his first Premier League start in midweek against Cardiff? If he starts in midfield, if we see, I mean, I don't know how fit Aguero is, but Jesus starting, we see a lot of second-string players. I mean, it's the FA Cup semi-final. This is what you used to save your players for. And now we're going to be saying, stay home, Aguero, as your calf, leave it for the week.
Yeah,
that's
but
not great, is it?
He'll start, won't he? Him and Sterling, they'll definitely start. I think so, yeah. And they're basically playing twice a week for the rest of April. So, you know, I mean, even Deeney, we'll get on to Watford, but even Deeney this week is saying, and you can talk about the merits of playing a league game leading up to an FA Cup semi. You know, even he's saying, I'm knackered. I need a little rest here because they're playing an awful lot of football leading up to the semi-final.
Yeah, but City can cope. They've got the squad
that's
that
the point.
Cope. Look at their bench.
Yeah, City can, but a lot of other sides can't. You look at Brighton and Watford, they obviously don't have the same
depth. Deeney really said he's tired?
Yeah, he has come out and said that? Yeah.
That's astounding me, that is. A player has come out and said he's tired.
You're getting into April in the real depths of the season. There's an awful lot riding on these fixtures.
I'll just look at it that way, be honest, Dave. It's work, and you are going to get tired, and it's part and parcel. You go into a semi-final. If you are going to be maybe tired, but in a way, it's a semi-final. You shouldn't be coming out saying, I'm tired. And it just doesn't make any sense to me that a player's saying it. And I can't ever remember anyone ever coming out and saying publicly, I'm tired.
Speaking of tired, let's get on to Benjamin Mendy. He will face no action from Manchester City as he did not break club rules when spotted out partying in the early hours of Saturday morning. There was a training session the next day he turned up for. Benjamin Mendy has been injured a lot during his time at Manchester City. His performances were being brought into question before this latest injury. Paul Parker, do we see Benjamin Mendy in the FA Cup team? And do we see him in the Champions League team as well? Does he have a future at Man City with this sort of raving behaviour?
I don't think anyone's going to be surprised if Manchester City go out and buy a left-back. I really don't, because even when he's played for me, he hasn't been the player who I saw at Monaco. And the one thing I did learn as well, which maybe I should have listened to a little bit more, is that when you are out injured, you just don't go out. It affects your rehabilitation without a shadow of a doubt. Doesn't matter if you're saying, oh, I'm not drinking. It's the fact you're out late and you're putting stress on your body. And he shouldn't be doing that, especially now. Football is so public. It's a silly thing to do. Every time you see Mendy, he's out on a pitch doing things. He's got a phone in his hand taking pictures.
Yeah.
People want to see him playing football.
I mean, I read about Bertrand. Ryan Bertrand, he was out injured. He asked for all the games at Southampton, looked at how they played under Hasenhüttl. Now he's back fit and he's flying. And I'm sure Pep's thinking, Mendy, you should be doing the same.
Let's move away slightly from the FA Cup because, of course, Tottenham Hotspur played their first game in their new ground this week. And that is where the game will be in the Champions League in midweek between these two. And just a quick question from two of the guys that were there in midweek. Paul, let's come to you first on this, the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Where did it rate for you? How was the atmosphere for you? And do you think it'll give maybe an unfair advantage to Tottenham going into that game in midweek?
Well, it can be as unfair as it wants, really, for Tottenham. They need something because it's been that, you know, it's been unfair from the fact of playing at Wembley for so long, that what they've had to endure, and I mean that by the players, and they've done great to achieve what they've achieved by, you know, playing away from home for so long. As a stadium, you have to give it, for me, 10 in every department. The atmosphere was absolutely fantastic, and sitting in the press area, then looking to my right and seeing that stand, the stand is absolutely immense.
So it's 17,500 people in that stand. The highest stand in Europe, 37 metres high, I believe. I mean, you were there, Dave. You were able to soak it in.
It was incredible. The sort of small pre-match opening ceremony, if you like, where we had, I think there was some kids and a choir from the local area singing along
with Mr. Go Compare.
Yeah, was
I mean, we had heard Adele was going to be there, and it turned out to be the opera singer from the Go Compare ads.
And I
mean,
I think he did a better job than Adele would have done, I have to say. It was a fantastic moment. And it was spine-tingling, actually, when the fireworks went off. You see all the fans were waving their flags, the lights were going off, and you could really feel the emotion and the joy that Spurs and those supporters were back home. And the game itself didn't quite live up to that, really. It wasn't the best game of football. Two scrappy goals, but they got the job done. They got 3 points, which are really important 3 points to sort of get them back on their feet after a really difficult run. I think the stadium, I think now they got that first win, I think you haven't got any worries about them struggling with it at all. I think it will help them. I think the atmosphere against Manchester City in what is a huge, huge game in the Champions League will be amazing, probably be a level up from what we had against Crystal Palace. I think, as Paul will rightly attest, there are some issues around the stadium with access and getting into it, getting out of it. I mean, the queues, even though they've got those six-second beer cups that fill up from the bottom, the queues are still enormous.
They could do 10,000 pints a minute.
Well, and then I think they ran out at one point. And you've still got the stadium in the same place as the old one, but you've got about another 25,000 people coming in and out of it. So obviously there was going to be issues, but I think they've done as well as they can.
Questions to answer for Spurs, but one final question for you two guys, having watched the game. Did you visit the Tottenham Hotspur microbrewery? Did you have a pint of Spurs ale?
No, I didn't. I was working, but I did walk past it.
You did?
I did walk past it. I could just see it over there, a mass of people who were there, by the way.
Did you have a go, Dave?
I couldn't get close.
No
chance. I tried to, but I couldn't get through the crowd.
Me being professional saying it didn't enter my mind.
He was in the cheese room, the cheddar room.
I think the cheese room's a myth, actually.
Apparently, the artisanal cheese room isn't really happening. It was a shame, because I had so many puns ready for the game. Couldn't use a single one of them. You know, what a shame. Anyway, that's all to come. That's it midweek. Spurs up against Man City. We'll talk about that next week, reviewing that on our next preview show. Listen, another FA Cup semi-final coming up this weekend. And if Man City against Brighton is moderately predictable, I don't think the next one is. We'll talk Watford against Wolves next. Right, let's get into Watford up against Wolverhampton Wanderers, the Sunday FA Cup semi-final. What a fantastic game this is. I was going to go to David Walker, our football editor, the Watford fan, but of course we know he's more of a fan of Triple H and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't know any modern wrestlers than he is of any Watford players. So let's start with Wolverhampton Wanderers, if you don't mind, because I thought they were fantastic once again against Manchester United in midweek. Paul, you would have watched the game, of course, former Manchester United fullback. Second time they have outclassed United, Wolverhampton Wanderers, in the space of a few weeks. How impressed with Wolves are you? And what about that front two as well? Jota and Jimenez. It's so good to see a front two that seem to have an on-field relationship. It's like a throwback in many ways.
It is a throwback, and Jota took a bit of a while to get going from what he done last season. It took him a while to get into it, to Premier League, and he's making himself into a star. Jimenez is just everything of an old-fashioned centre forward. He works hard. He's sticking his body on the line. He's making unselfish runs, but he can nick a goal as well. But the main thing for me is that Wolves have not been given enough credit for what they've done so far this season. They beat Manchester United twice, deservedly so, but everyone has talked about United's issue, and me, even though I'm ex-United, I still think Wolves deserve what they got. They deserve to win both games hands down, as much as United could say they had their little spells. In that last game, Wolves would, for over that hour and a half, Wolves had at least 60 minutes of that game of control where they looked in charge.
They've been really good against the top six, haven't they, this season? They've not been fazed at all by some of the big names and the big teams and the big stadiums that they've gone to. And at Molineux, very comfortable. Another ground with a fantastic atmosphere. But I wonder, when it comes to this match, are Watford a team that Wolves might struggle against more so than against a Manchester United or a big team like that?
Well, the only thing I'd say is I'm a huge fan of how they play. Wolves, right from the Championship, they've carried it on. Jota's evolved, doesn't he, to sort of play up front a little bit more as opposed to out wide. They struggled against Burnley and they had loads of the ball, but they lost. And I thought, well, is that because Jimenez didn't start? They kept him on the bench, yeah. You know, and is he that important to them? Well, I'd say he probably is. Yeah.
I think he's going to sign for them permanently today, actually.
I believe it's 25 or 30 million.
Yeah, now, that may be done by the time you're listening to this out there, but yeah, we're expecting it done anyway. And for 30 million-ish, that's a pretty decent signing, isn't it?
I mean, let's be honest, he's got the lot, right? And if he didn't sign for Wolves, there'd be a queue a mile long of you know, your West Hams or someone, one of the big boys.
Well, I think Slaven Bilic once thought Raul Jimenez was done about 18 months ago, and then they signed Simone Zaza instead. But let's move on from that. Back to Jimenez.
Well, I mean, I think they're playing really, really well. I think this will be a very difficult game for Watford, because I think, to be honest, that Wolves have got a lot of width in their side. Watford are very dominant through the middle. And I think what they have out wide, Wolves, I think could really hurt the Hornets. So I think it'll be a difficult game. I fancy Wolves on this one, but I think it'll be close, because Watford, you know, they've got different sorts of strengths, and if they get them right, then it could be tough. Look at Burnley, how well they did against them, so you never know.
It's an interesting point you make about the width there, because I was at Vicarage Road on Tuesday night when Watford played Fulham. In the first half, Fulham played a back three and they had wing backs, and Watford really struggled actually to deal with those players in wide areas, and Fulham got a bit of joy coming in from the wide, crossing them in, and the Wolves wide players, Doherty or Johnny, whoever they have out on the right, will cause Watford more problems than the Fulham players did, because they're much better.
That midfield is so interesting, I think, for this game, because you've got Kapu and Doucouré have been fantastic in midfield for Watford this season. On the other side, you've got Moutinho and Neves and Dendonka will play as a trio. And I've got to mention Moutinho from midweek, because I'm watching the game and I'm thinking, Moutinho was £5 million. I know he's 32 and coming kind of towards the end. Up against Fred, it was £61.2 million. Mm. And I know who I'd have in my Manchester United midfield. I mean, the quality of the game from midfield. You know, we watch teams outside the top six in these big games, and sometimes it becomes a bit harem, scarem, bung it forward to someone, knockdowns and all that. I don't think that's the game we're going to get. I think we're going to get a good football match here between these two teams. Oh, they'll get it down and play.
Absolutely. And the one player you didn't mention there, who I think is definitely got the talent, and if he's fit, hopefully he'll shine, is Will Hughes, you know, for Watford. Mm.
He scored in midweek as well.
Fantastic. Now, you know, he's at, I guess, maybe not as glamorous a side as, you know, some of the others, arguably. And is that why he hasn't got a chance for England? I don't know, but I think he's a terrific talent.
A lot of injuries during his career, though. Maybe that is a bit of an issue in there. But if he keeps playing as good as he was in midweek, then
look, they've got a good height, haven't they, with Kapu, Doucouré. You know, they can be a threat at set pieces. Watford, a real threat. So I think it'll be a really good game.
But I think when you talk about good threat from set pieces, Wolves aren't too bad themselves. You look at the problems they cause people. Mm-hmm. Someone who's underrated for them as well is Bolly.
Yeah.
Bolly doesn't get a mention, but I'll tell you what, everyone talks about Cody. Bolly is a very, very good centre-half.
I mean, the only other, I guess, issue for Watford is, what do they do with the front two? You know, does De La Feo, because he came off and Gray came on and it was excellent. Is Gray going to partner Deeney?
Gray looks like he's arrived at Watford now, doesn't he?
Well, and he's not happy being a sub. He says, no. I don't want to be a super sub. You know, I want to start games. Now, that's a big call for the manager, because De La Feo's been excellent. You talk about the front twos, they've got Jimenez and Jota, and Watford obviously got Deeney and De La Feo.
Andre Gray could not have done any more to get himself into the starting lineup for this semi-final. He's scored off the bench in three home games, winning goals, including that quarter-final against Crystal Palace. And then he came off the bench at half-time against Fulham. Didn't manage to score because he didn't really get any clear-cut chances. But he was electric. He created two goals. He completely changed the game. He looked strong, confident. His passing was... He was fizzing it into Deeney and getting it back. They were unplayable almost.
Would you play him from the start?
But the question is... Has he found his role as this impact substitute who's found a way of changing games from the bench? And the shape of the team would change a bit if you started Deeney and Gray, because what you do with De La Feo, I don't think he likes playing De La Feo out wide in the midfield because he doesn't offer you anything defensively at all.
Yeah, I saw Deeney and Gray play against Queen's Park Rangers in the Cup, and Gray wasn't that good, to be honest. He had quite a poor game. He did look like a player who has come through the leagues, to be honest, in that game. But then I've seen him since then, and he's looked better. But playing with Deeney dropping off, in my opinion, didn't really help him.
I mean, he doesn't have the skills that De La Feo have. He's not as he's not as intricate with his feet. Is he? His hold-up play and link-up isn't going to be his strength. But, you know, going the other way, he's a real handful.
Let's talk goalkeepers for this one. John Ruddy has been playing in the Cup in previous rounds. He even got a game in the league before the Cup to get him ready for the quarter-final, though we'd imagine Rui Patricio will get the nod. He did play in midweek. And what about the other side as well? Aurelio Gomez had that emotional goodbye to Vicarage Road in the quarter-final when he played. Got to be Ben Foster, hasn't it, for this one, you'd imagine?
It's a huge call, because obviously on form, Foster plays. He's been one of the best signings of the season in any position, let alone goalkeeper. The thing is, Gomez, if he does play, I think all the Watford fans and the players and the coach will know that he won't let them down. It's not like you're putting a kid in. You're not putting someone untested in. He is an excellent goalkeeper still at his age, and he did well in the quarterfinal, made a crucial save at 1-1. So I as a Watford supporter, I wouldn't be unhappy if Gomez lines up, but on probability, if you're being cold, hard and ruthless about it, you've got to pick Foster.
I think Foster will start. I think that he'll be demanding to I wouldn't say demanding, he's not that, but you know, he wants to play. He doesn't care about training, but he's already said that he wants to start. And to me, you've got to pick your best side. You're going to win a tournament. You're going to win a trophy.
See, I'm going against everything I normally say, is that sentiment. I just look at someone like Gomez and I look at Ruddy's played in every game through it, and all of a sudden, when it comes to something that matters, it's going to be taken away. And as much as anything, yeah, people say, yeah, it'll be all right. He'll be sitting on the bench. He'll get a medal. But it's actually playing. Having a medal is all right, but it's even better when you've actually played and you sweated. Mm. Regardless of a winners or losers, you sweated for it. So Arsene Wenger didn't really care, did he? He changed the goalkeeper. When it came to, he wanted to win, so he done that. But I think it's...
And he did win. He won three or four FA Cups in recent years. So.
I think when you're a goalkeeper, when you're a second or third choice keeper, you know your role in life. You sign up to that. You know it. You get the odd chance. To me, if you weren't happy with that, then don't sign. So whether it's Gomez, who's been brilliant, or whatever, or Ruddy, they know their role. And to me, you've got to pick your number one.
So it is a myth that the goalkeepers' unions, they all hate each other, don't they? They're not great friends as they make out.
Those are the FA Cup semi-finals. They're available in the UK on TalkSport, available outside the UK through our global broadcast partners around the world. Let's get to the Premier League, shall we? Want to talk about Liverpool, back down in second following City's win in midweek. They can retake top against Southampton on Friday.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Right, let's get to the Premier League, shall we? Plenty of action in the world's most exciting league this weekend. Want to start on Friday night, 8 o'clock UK time, when Southampton take on Liverpool. The Saints have won 5 of their 10 Premier League games against Liverpool at St Mary's. They've only beaten Everton more than they've beaten Liverpool on this ground. And the Saints are also looking to win 3 consecutive Premier League games for the first time since May 2016, when they won 4 back then. So, David Connolly, former Southampton striker, I think it's fair to say here, it's not a great time for Liverpool to be going to Southampton.
No, I mean, they're in really good form. They've used the international break, I think I spoke of earlier, to work on this sort of change in shape, which worked against Brighton. Went back to, he likes a 4, and then basically playing similar to Watford. And they got
the
a really good
4-2-2-2.
Yes, absolutely. And prior to that, they got an excellent result against Spurs. And look, people talk about, say, the changes. You know, if Fulham had got a better manager, would they have maybe stayed up? Well, look, Southampton, if they'd have continued under Mark Hughes, they were getting 0.6 points per game. They'd be on like 18 points. They'd be relegated. Hassan Ertl's had a really good impact. You can tell the players are enjoying themselves, really high tempo, and they've often had the league in games that squandered it. That doesn't seem to be happening now. I think they're in a really good place. So I think this is a really challenging game for Liverpool. It really is.
I must say, I do fancy Southampton to get something. I've actually done that in my predictions. I really do just think, just seeing Liverpool at Fulham, where I thought they were very, very fortunate to get that penalty, and then the late goal against Tottenham, I just think they're not ready for the position they're in at this moment in time, Liverpool. I think there's something that's showing that isn't the right signs for a side that's going to win the Premier League.
I think luck might be on their side, though, at the moment. As we saw against Tottenham, they are not firing on all cylinders, and that much is obvious, especially compared to Manchester City at the moment, who really are in the groove. But they do seem to have a way of getting the job done, which is an invaluable quality. As you all know, Paul, from all those Manchester United teams, when you need a goal in the last minute, you got it. You always seem to get it, and that could take them over the line.
Yeah, but there's a lot of games where they've just kind of been getting that. I mean, we had one in my first season of winning the first Premier League season, I should say, against Sheffield Wednesday.
Steve Bruce,
two headers, and one of them was just
Fergie on the pitch.
Yep, that was right, him and Brian Kidd, and that happened that season. But the following season,
where were you on the pitch at that time? Can you remember it?
Yeah, I was off the pitch on the bench. I'd been dragged off. We needed a goal, so they got me off.
We're losing, Parker. Off you get, son.
Oh, you know the scene.
Listen, I want to get back to Southampton briefly, because the tail down the bottom of the table has been really, really interesting. It now looks like Cardiff have got a mountain to climb to stay up, which means Southampton on 33 points, 5 points clear, might just be one win away. You mentioned some of the changes they've made offensively, but what about defensively? What about some of these players? What about Jan Valeri? We'd not heard of Jan Valeri maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago. The Southampton insiders might, but I'd never heard of him.
No.
And also the form of Maya Yoshida has come back in. Jan Bednarek, who was phenomenal a couple of days ago as well when they won that game at Brighton. I mean, the defensive improvements they've made is going to make it so hard for Liverpool, who are not free scoring, to break them down.
Yes, because I think they've actually changed how they play. Look, one way to take the pressure off a back line who are conceding a lot of goals, you know, you can become a good player overnight, but they're definitely pressing higher up the park. Much, much higher up the park. They've definitely got a game plan that they all buy into, which is trying to win it high with this. I know it's been spoken about this high press or whatever it may be. And you've got to remember, both managers are German. They both know each other. You know, one obviously has worked his way up through the league, so Hassan Hurtle, and he's got his chance now. But he's got a clear philosophy, a way of playing. And I think they were muddled. under Hughes. They didn't really know what they were doing. Now they know. They're going to win it high. They've got a little bit of a higher defensive line, trying to take the pressure off. They've got a good goalkeeper, young gun. And their results have been, you know, they've been really, they're like fifth in the form table since the start of the year. So this is going to be, a potential banana skin for Liverpool.
I can already feel the tweets coming in. He's Austrian, Ralf Hasenhüttl, but has had a long time in German football.
Sorry. Just worked his way through.
I can just feel the abuse coming in, so I just want to throw that out there right now. Listen, let's talk a bit more about Liverpool. Managed to beat Tottenham, as David Walker said, last week, but it took another goalkeeper making another massive error. Was there a meeting of goalkeepers at the start of the season to give Liverpool the league? I don't know. First Baroni, then Pickford, and now it's Lloris. I'm not sure, but again, Paul Parker, they weren't brilliant against Tottenham. And in fact, Tottenham were the team coming on strong at the end of that game, and they won it. And you know, as David says, you've been in successful sides in the Premier League, and we talk a lot about playing poorly and winning, but that can't take you all the way there when you're up against Man City, can it?
I really don't believe it can, but I do look at Liverpool, and every time I look at their team, he's virtually playing a midfield of three holding players. There is no creativity in that midfield. He's relying on a front three to change the game for him. And I'm sorry, two out of the three are not working. Not working this season. Firmino has been out of it. I think Salah has been out of it. It's not just about the fact he isn't scoring goals. He's just not really in the game. Things are falling apart off of him. Mane has been a massive revelation from last season. His form has really picked up. His goal scoring has picked up even more. And you look at their three midfield players and you say to yourself, who is going to be in there? Who's going to be that creative link? They haven't got it. So teams are getting at him all the time.
It's the fullbacks that are the creative players, aren't they?
The two fullbacks are fantastic. They're changing the ball. I've never seen fullbacks change the play to each other so many times in my life. They do it every time. I saw them at Fulham. I've seen them so many times. I saw them at Crystal Palace. I've seen them do it all the time. Fantastic the way they do that. And they have got that. The fullbacks are their strength. But when you're playing three in there, you know, when you saw the midfield the other day with Milner and Henderson together and Wanyama in there as well. Not Wanyama, sorry. Van Alden in there as well. You say to yourself, come on. Put someone in there who's going to maybe take it off the front three. Make an opportunity for the front three.
Like a Shaqiri. I mean, yeah. I know his basic form's fallen off a cliff since December. He's barely played. But you'd think someone like him would be ideal. Now, also, you could say, I look at, say, what Ole Solskjaer's done at United in terms of Rashford and Lukaku, how he's rotated those two. One's got some goals, one's been on the bench. He's taken one off, put one on, one's got some goals, right? He's kept them really happy and in form. You look at Salah, who's had a busy World Cup and, you know, not a lot of rest. And he's played, what, 890 minutes now without scoring. Mm. And I don't know whether, you know, someone like an Ole in charge, you know, would he have dipped him out? You know, then brought him on and nicked a goal and just freshened him up a little.
Well, Firmino's dipped out, hasn't he, for Origi at times? But Salah hasn't.
Exactly. I don't know if he's missed a trick there. I know it's like if you haven't scored a few, sometimes you might think, come on, just take us out for a game or two and let me and dip me in. And that might get him back in form because, you know, they really are reliant on say, the likes of Mane at the minute.
It does look like Salah's been snatching at the chances a little bit and maybe shooting when the pass is on or vice versa. He's conscious, I think, of the fact that he hasn't scored. And I think he needs one more to get his landmark goal for Liverpool as well, doesn't he?
He's going on for a long time now.
You know, so it that probably is weighing on his mind. But I think that's the key as well. The options, when you take him out of the team, it's a Origi or Sturridge. We have to change the shape a bit and it's not the same, is it?
Listen, quick quiz before we move on. We mentioned Andy Robertson there. 9 assists in the Premier League this season. Only 2 players in Premier League history have had more in one season in the Premier League. Who are they?
Farragas.
It's good, but it's not right.
Oh.
Looking for fullbacks.
Say again.
Oh, fullback.
Looking for fullbacks here.
Right.
And maybe he has been a fullback.
Leighton Baines.
Oh, very nice. One in already. Leighton Baines, 11 in 2010-11. That's 11 assists that season. There is one other.
Ashley Cole.
It's good, but it's not right. It comes from 94-95.
Paul Parker.
I wish it was so much.
Graham Lasso.
He never got that further far forward. He was Dennis on the bench Irwin. When they scored. No. Any more?
94-95.
He's still very current. He's still working. He's still covering games.
Stuart Pearce? No.
It's not Stuart Pearce. Do you want it? I'll tell you. It's a former England international. Made his debut in 95 for England.
Gary Neville.
No, never Nev.
Andy Hinchcliffe.
Oh,
wow. 94-95, 11 really? Assists as well. Didn't see that coming, did you?
No, I did not.
Do you know how many assists you had in one season, Paul?
Nope.
Did they do stats? Not them stats in those days?
No. Nope.
They took you off before, as we know. Someone else crossed the Brucey. We know.
It was tackles. Yeah. The only stat he was interested in was tackles.
That's true.
That's exactly right.
Very, very high, I'm sure.
Oh, he made 5 tackles in the game. I go, is that all? Oh, he had a good game here. How's 5 tackles in the game any good?
But it's about still. £30,000 a tackle these days, isn't it?
Oh, Christ, I knew I got it wrong. I'm going to blame my mum.
Listen, we've got to move on. I want to talk about Everton up against Arsenal. It's Sunday at 2:05 UK time. Everton, I thought, were fantastic against West Ham last week. West Ham are very poor, but Everton played very, very well. Before we talk about the game itself, though, just a quick question on Jordan Pickford. Now, I'm sure all of you out there listening and in the room as well would have seen some of the videos from Jordan Pickford having a bit of an altercation in Sunderland Town Centre following their game in the Checker Trade Trophy in midweek. He's also had some erratic performances as well, Jordan Pickford. Do you think it's about time he gets taken out of the limelight a little bit, Jordan Pickford? He has been reminded of his responsibilities by the club.
I don't. I feel sorry for Jordan Pickford. I tweeted about this week. Look, he as a professional footballer and a very high-profile professional footballer, he should still know not to get drawn into a fight, a scuffle, whatever it was. But I've never experienced this, and I don't know whether you two guys have. I mean, you're not quite on Jordan Pickford's level, but you might have had a few over the years. If people are coming up to you and filming you and taking photos, and it's all right if someone's coming up to you and asking for a selfie now and again or whatever, and it's good-natured. But you could see those guys shoving their cameras in his face and then putting it on Instagram saying, oh, look, it's Butterfingers, and they're goading him and they're there all the time. He just wants to have a drink in his hometown on a day off. And I can't really blame him for doing that and wanting to do that. You can't expect these guys to just live in quarantine for their whole life. You know, people have got to enjoy themselves and be normal and be with their friends, right?
He went out on a football night. Sunderland had just played in that game at Wembley. The checkout cup, whatever they call it.
It's the Checker Trade Trophy.
Thank you.
Keep it in your head.
There's nothing wrong with winning that.
No, absolutely right. And some very good players have won it down the years.
He went out after that. So in theory, he knew what he was going into. He was going to mix with people who had been drinking
the
all
fans.
Day.
The fans. He went out with the lads, didn't he? Like he
people
was not a famous footballer.
People had been drinking all day. So he knew what he was going into. And yes, it was said that his missus took a few pelters from people. Mm. But he must have known what was going on. The moment he sensed it, he should have walked away.
Yeah.
Without that, and he got involved. Like you say,
he's a local
boy. But he should have had the sense.
He's a
to
human.
Them,
he's
to
a
then
human,
walk
isn't he,
away.
You know?
David, Connie, what do you think?
Well, look, I'm a fan of Jordan. One, he was in the youth team when I was at Sunderland, so I know him well. He's a terrific lad. He's gone back to his hometown. He's not giving it the big I am. You know, if he stayed at home all day and never went out, you know, in and amongst his people, people might say he's living in an ivory tower, or whatever. So he's out socialising with his mates. Arguably, I didn't like going out with my missus at times because I felt that if someone said something, you know, there'd always be problems. Too much hassle. If you go out with the lads, the only time I went out with my missus and another player's wife, it ended up in it was Paul Bosvelt in Rotterdam, and he was, despite being captain of Feyenoord, basically got attacked with a baseball bat. You know, and that was because somebody was rude to his wife, and it all kicked off. And I just don't like that thing when you go out with your partner. I don't know why, because there's other lads who don't have partners. It all gets a bit messy. But I don't think you can level anything particularly at Pickford because he's going out in his hometown. He is a northern lad. You know, he loves Sunderland. He grew up there. You know, and he's got to, you know, go out and what's wrong with having a couple of hours out? You just get some idiots. That's the problem.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Let's talk about the game. How good were Everton against West Ham, or how bad were West Ham? David Connolly, what do you think is the biggest denominator here?
Well, West Ham were woeful. Covered that game for TalkSport International. They were absolutely atrocious. It's one of the worst displays I've seen, certainly from a fullback in Pablo Zabaleta, who was just AWOL. I don't know what he was doing. And Everton, it was like, you know, they were schooling them about how to play tactically. I mean, they just sat in, let Zabaleta bomb on for fun, win the ball and just attack into his space. I mean, 2-0, it should have been 3 or 4-0. They were absolutely awful.
It was just a shame, really, because I've always been a massive fan of Zabaleta. Just somebody I looked at as a fullback. I always kept saying he's been one of the best fullbacks in the Premier League.
Gone on a bit
ever.
Too long, do you think?
Yes, he's got to that point now. Even I looked at him early season, he was still looking okay, but I saw a game he played and his legs were gone. They took him off at half time because he was that poor. I think, I can't remember, it was Fulham. Took him off at half time as well. So there is something there now. He has served his purpose. And when you look, they've got Ryan Fredericks there. They've even got my cousin there, Ben Johnson, there at West Ham as well. So they've got cover in that position. Somewhere along the line, he's got, I think the manager has to do his friends and someone who we trust a favour.
Let's go back to Everton, though. Poor old Pablo. He was annihilated by Everton, but they had some wonderful footballers on the day. And again, it was just a virtuoso performance from Andre Gomes. We're talking here about Declan Rice maybe going to Man United, having 100 games for England. Well, I'm not too sure at the moment he's that good, considering Andre Gomes just absolutely taught him a lesson last weekend. And, you know, we've spoken about Schneiderlin and Garner maybe being the best balance for Everton, but when he's on form, Andre Gomes, he's right up there with some of the best in the league.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk of other clubs looking at him, you know, potentially stealing him. He was one of many standout players. Digne as well. They made some good signings, right? I think they've had a bit of time to get rid of maybe some of their lesser lights, but, you know, certainly the likes of Gomes and Digne have been two terrific signings. And Bernard was brilliant. You know, what a terrific little player he is. So I think, look, if they got a number nine, Everton, if they had a standout number nine, like a Jimenez or somebody, Calvert-Lewin's got potential, but I still think they need someone else up there. They'd be a really top side.
And listen, they're up against Arsenal this weekend. We'll talk Arsenal in just a few moments' time. Let's get to Arsenal. We'll go to Everton this weekend. They find themselves at the moment right in that Champions League mix. A wonderful run of home form. Another victory for them in midweek against Newcastle. Of course, they'd beaten Man United in their previous home game as well. But away from home, they continue to struggle. Just one victory in their last eight on the road. Three draws and four defeats in that time. Paul, how do they set up this weekend? Aubameyang's been on the bench in recent times with Lacazette starting. Iwobi starting up front at the moment with Aubameyang on the bench, which feels like I'm taking crazy pills. What do they do going forward? And also defensively, I mean, still, Socrates, Mustafi, Monreal, the mistakes keep on happening.
I look at it and, you know, I'm one of them people who's sitting there going about Spurs are having a good season, yet Arsenal every so often keep going above them in the league, which doesn't make any sense. And for me, Arsenal are having a poor season, yet they are where they are with a shocking defence. Their defence, every time you see them looking at each other, arguing with each other, they give things away. Mustafi's cross the other day, his own players were laughing at him with that horrendous cross. Him at right back, and then my son's telling me, but Dad, he played right back for Germany in a, I think it was a Euros he played at right back, and I think, wow. But up front, they've got quality, and that's what's got them over the line. Now we're just seeing now they're trying to get behind, and everyone's trying to beat the drums now for Ozil. He's still coasting. He's walking through games, hardly touching it, not really showing any effort, yet they're still winning games. Who can complain?
I think it's a bit harsh on Arsenal to say they've had a poor season. If you consider how bad it got under Wenger in the last season or two, you know, at the moment they are in with a big shout of finishing the top four, and they were nowhere near that last year, were they? Yeah, there's still problems away from home. Defensively, there are issues, but they're basically playing the only defenders they've got at the moment. Yeah. Carl Jenkinson's nearly in the team, and you know, the great survivor that he is, he's the only one of that picture of all those young English lads that's still at the club, isn't he, from all those years ago? But I think they've done really well. Quietly, they've had a few moments where you've thought, oh, that's, you know, they've had a few bad games, but they've had some great moments as well. They've got a lot of good players going forward, and I think it's promising for Arsenal.
I agree. I mean, you know, they're down to about, during the season, their fifth or sixth choice centre-half. Now, you tell me how good, you know, do you need your fifth or sixth choice centre-halves to be? I mean, so it's slightly unfair. They've got the same points as they did last season already, and they've got seven games left.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if they finished third above Tottenham. It wouldn't surprise me whatsoever.
Well, even with that many games away from home.
Yeah, even with that amount of games. And Ozil, look, he's much maligned, but I think, finally, I think Unai Emery, I'm a fan of Ozil. I really am. I think he's the sort of player who you should be able to get in your side for whatever reason every week. And a lot of Arsenal fans will say, well, you don't watch him every week, you know, which is fair enough. But I know that he's the sort of player, if I was Lacazette and Aubameyang, I'd want him directly behind
me. You've seen him enough, though. Everyone knows he's a quality player, but he was outshone by Aaron Ramsey, I think it's fair to say, on Monday, enjoying his farewell tour of Arsenal. Let's move on to Monday Night Football. Chelsea against West Ham. Chelsea unbeaten in the last 12 home league meetings with the Hammers. West Ham, though, unbeaten in three against Chelsea, home and away. Their best run for some years. Starting with Chelsea, Paul Parker, Callum Hudson-Odoi played in midweek and was very impressive. Olivier Giroud got a rare start, and would you believe it, Eden Hazard's playing well again because he's got someone to play with. We're getting to this game on Monday. Are we going to see Giroud and Hudson-Odoi still in the starting lineup, or is it going to be a return for the likes of Pedro and Higuain?
I don't know whether to take that as a leading question because you know the answer, but I think I have to go along and say it's not going to happen. I just don't see Odoi starting that game, Hudson-Odoi starting that game. I think he'll He's brought in Higuaín. He's made a big point that he wanted him. He's going to want to play him because Higuaín looks like a person who's not going to be happy sat on the bench, saying that he never looks happy anyway. I'm a big fan of Giroud. I loved Giroud when he was at Arsenal because someone like him, people talk about his goals, but it's about what he gives you without the goals. And he gives you everything without the goals. Every time he's come on a sub for Chelsea, and I've been to Stamford Bridge a few times this season, he makes a difference. People are willing to give the ball to him so many times. You see Higuaín, they avoid him. They do not want to give him the ball too often with his back to goal. They want him to face the goal.
Yeah. Tough assignment for West Ham in this one, David Connolly. We saw them get outplayed by Everton. Is there going to be some sort of reaction? Felipe Anderson should be back for this one.
I can't see it. No, I think they're going to get swatted aside here. I mean, you've got to remember, they picked up 3 points against Huddersfield, but they were equally bad as they were against Everton. But obviously, you know, Hernandez came on and nicked a couple of goals and, you know, they had a real improvement. But I think they're in awful form. Lost 2-0 to Cardiff. I mean, I don't know what's going on there, but I can't see that continuing. Certainly, I think someone like Pellegrini, he's got to go into someone. They need to get someone else in.
I think, there's certainly questions about Manuel Pellegrini from some supporters. I'd be one of them. I think he'll get a second season, time to invest again, but there are issues with West Ham,
certainly.
You could
do with just giving someone another season,
I think that's a fair point, yeah, absolutely. But there are some questions about some really atrocious showings in recent weeks.
Well, look, if you look at the Everton game, they've gone with, okay, they wanted their man, Silva, but they've got an identity, they've got a way of going about things. He's there for the long term. Pellegrini, with his age and everything else, I just think it's a short-term fix, a bit like a Ranieri at Fulham. It's not going to work.
Then again, 3 years, if he gets his three-year contract, that's about as long as managers last. So I'm not sure he's a short-term fix. Everyone is a bit of a short-term fix. But we've got to move on. Bournemouth against Burnley, Saturday at 3 o'clock. Burnley looking to complete their first league. I love your face when I do these sorts of games. Yeah. Burnley looking to complete their first league double over Bournemouth since 99-2000, when they were both in the third tier. Bournemouth winless in their last three home games, previously unbeatable at home. Another season, David Connolly, where Bournemouth are just getting to the end of it and they'll finish 12th.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing for them is, I guess, can they be the best South Coast side? That's about it. Can they finish above Southampton or Brighton? And can they keep hold of someone like Ryan Fraser?
Southampton might push him, you know. Southampton might get there.
What about David Brooks as well?
Yeah, exactly. They've got some good players. I think the Fraser link is something in that. Yeah. I think they've got to be worried that they might lose someone. Because you've got to remember, week in, week out, if they are at home, they're playing in front of 10,000. You know, and ultimately that's not going to change for a lot of these players, whether it's Callum Wilson or whoever.
Burnley, 33 points now, Paul. Just maybe one more win, a couple of points from safety. I mean, were Cardiff going to get to 35, 36? Probably
not. They're not going to get there now. At one point, I really, really did fancy him. It's just a shame what happened to him in that Chelsea game. Really a shame there, because Neil Warnock was maybe then thinking to himself, he's going to manage it. He's going to keep a team up for the first time in the top division. But I think even now, I think he's accepted it's not going to happen.
Huddersfield are gone. They take on Leicester Saturday at 3 o'clock. They haven't scored more than once in their last 21 Premier League home games, just 8 in total. Lost 8 of their last 9 at the John Smiths. Leicester, the opponents this weekend. David Connolly, I tell you what, Brendan Rodgers, he did come in at the right time, didn't he? The fixtures have fallen very, very nicely, and Huddersfield away is the exact game you would want, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at, I think he came when they were 12th and they're up to 8th, and you look at the players that they've got, Harvey Barnes, Damari Gray, Maddison, Tielemans, all 22 and under. And that's without even the likes of Ndidi, Chilwell. I mean, they've got a really talented side. So, yeah, I think they're going to get another three points here. That'll be, what, 4 wins in a row? He's had a great impact, Rodgers.
I bet Huddersfield win.
Just out of nowhere.
I bet you they've been relegated. I bet you they just go out and think, oh, let's have a go, and they might win.
Well, I'll have 100 quid of you on that.
Here we go. Make sure that goes in the broadcast. That's got to go out. Let's go to Newcastle Crystal Palace. One final game for this weekend, Saturday at 3 o'clock. Newcastle have won their last 5 Premier League home games. Fantastic run they have been on. But, Paul, you were watching Crystal Palace on Wednesday against Tottenham. We're going to need to see a reaction, because they were awful in that game, and usually away from home. They're one of the best in the league. 6 wins on the road this campaign.
Yeah, that's right. I expected them to come out singing and dancing, because they love playing away from home against the big boys, as we know with the Etihad. They didn't. I don't know what Roy done to them, but he made them subdued. Did the occasion get to them? But then they're going to go to Newcastle. I think they'll go to Newcastle and they'll get something, because Newcastle again went away from home, didn't bother, were content to get beat at the Emirates. Just going through the motions. They think they can get away with it at home, but I just got this funny feeling that Crystal Palace will go to Newcastle and they will win.
I think that actually both of these sides are still looking over their shoulder. Now, Newcastle have got to play 3 of the teams beneath them, Southampton, Brighton, Fulham, and they can't really relax here. You know, now,
we all keep harking back to when Palace beat Man City away, but that seems like a sort of distant memory, really, and the form they're in. Newcastle, I thought Lascelles was back against Arsenal. I thought he'd make a difference, but in the end, they just, you know, just came up short. I think this might be a home victory for Newcastle. I fancy them.
One final question before we run out of time, because no Fulham game this week. Paul, it's the first time we've had a show since Fulham been relegated. It has been such a woeful season for them. And in many ways, sweet relief, that loss against Watford in midweek.
Yeah, they needed to be put out of their misery. And it's happened for them. It's happened away from home for them, which is us, even better. It's happened rather than be relegated in your own patch. But the next game is even more important. It's about what they go and show after it. And looking at the kind of players I've seen play from this season, it could be another miserable showing because they haven't got any character there at all.
Chaps, we'll see. We're out of time for this week. Paul, David and David, thank you very much indeed. We are back with another preview show next Wednesday. Thanks a lot.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.